What is this? The old dinky rope, but I can't move.
No one can resist the golden lasso. It binds all who it encircles and compels them to tell the truth.
Well, I can't think of a better time to ask our friends a few questions. Who's your superior in the attempts on the scanner project?
Hey, look, we never heard of your project. Whatchamacallit. We were paid to hit Major Steve Trevor. $500, no questions asked.
So the real saboteur hired some cheap muscle to get me out of the way.
He must know you're looking for him.
And he's getting nervous.
Steve, he might make another attempt on your life.
I don't think he'd risk giving himself away to get me a second time. He's after the scanner project, and I've got to get after him as soon as I drop these two hoods at the police station. All right, in the car. You drive.
Major, would you rather take your car?
I wonder if you can cook.
You've come a long way, baby, to get where you got to today.
Part-time fanboy. Fanboy.com.
This is Part-Time Fanboy, and my name is Christian Horn, and I am here with a group of wonderful women this week to discuss the only thing that any nerd, geek person is discussing this week, the new Wonder Woman movie that has come out this weekend. Everyone's been really excited about it, and as have I. And I actually wanted to do something special for this Part-Time Fanboy podcast. I sort of wanted to change it to Part-Time Fangirl or Woman. And I wanted to have a series of, I guess, all-female guest stars. And so through my friends who have appeared on this podcast, Paul Edwards and Jay Holtham, they have kind of set me up with three fantastic women to talk about Wonder Woman with. So from here on in, I'll let you guys introduce yourselves, or you ladies, apologize, and let's just go in the order of Skype as we discuss. So Kimmy, we'll go with you first.
Hi, I'm Kimmy. I go by Golden Lasso Girl on social media. I have a geeky blog where I blog about lots of different things, tabletop gaming, cosplay, movies, and comic books, and that's goldenlasso.net, as you can kind of tell. There's a bit of a theme going with my fandom.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Wonder Woman fan, and I do a lot of Wonder Woman cosplay and articles and stuff like that. And she's just an amazing teacher.
Yeah,
and just like wonderful, wonderful character. Love her.
Yeah. I do have to say that I love the Wonder Woman cosplay, but the big Barda thing is probably
the best
thing I saw on your website. That was amazing.
Oh, yeah. I love her, too. She's, like, right under Wonder Woman as far as, like, my favorite DC character. She's amazing, too.
That's great. And next up, we have Raina.
Hi. Yeah, my name's Raina, and I actually go by Chainsaw as well. On social media, I'm Chainsaw Queen 13.
Nice.
I kind of delve more into the horror world by day. I'm a professor of communications, so love to talk, love to critically analyze a lot of social or a lot of media. But I also love to scare people, and I love the horror genre, and I love, looking at how females kind of are representative in film, and especially in horror, but in film in general. So, yeah, that's nice.
Oh, that's great. And last but definitely not least, we have Lauren.
Hi, I'm Lauren Milberger. I'm an actor writer. I also co-host the Fordcast, a Harrison Ford podcast, where we are chronologically going through all of Harrison Ford's films in order.
That's amazing.
Nice.
And we also try to, because we both, me and my co-host are women, we are very much about wanting to promote the female actors or characters or people behind the scenes in a lot of Harrison Ford's films who maybe not have been highlighted before.
Oh, interesting.
I call it nerd girl history. I also blog all over sort of the internet, or I've done essay work from everything from comedy to Doctor Who. I'm definitely a time travel girl. And one of my first memories is watching the Linda Carter television series in reruns as a child.
Nice.
And I had the underoos.
Nice.
Very, very into Wonder Woman. I've sort of been reminded of that these last couple of weeks, which is wonderful.
Oh, that's great. That's really awesome.
My social media is just my name. I'm Lauren Berger on Twitter, and we are the Fordcast Podcast on everything else except for Twitter, where we are the Fordcast PC, because there was no more letters.
Oh, nice. That's great. So, I mean, thank you all for coming on. I really appreciate it. Part-time fanboy definitely does not have enough female representation, and it's something I've tried to fix over the years, but, you know, schedules don't line up, or, you know, people have other things going on, and I've definitely had female guests on, but it's definitely been more of a male-centric podcast. I will admit to that. So thank you for coming on. I really appreciated it, especially with all the crazy nonsense going on as far as like men freaking out over like all female Wonder Woman screenings. I was like, you know what, screw that. I just want to have, with the exception of myself, because it is my podcast, if I could have somebody else stand in, you know, an all-female roster sitting in. So, I mean, I know some of you went a little bit into your sort of history with Wonder Woman, but like how, like what is your, I mean, Kimmy, obviously, you know, hardcore into it, definitely. But I mean, what is sort of like your history with this character? Is it a character that, and you know, Lauren said a little bit too, but maybe to go in a little bit more depth as far as like what Wonder Woman kind of means to you, what, you know, where you discovered her, I mean, you know, that sort of thing, because I know I've been a fan of the character for a very long time, but I'm very interested to see what the female take is on that, because there have been different sort of interpretations I've read where, you know, a lot of people think she's kind of like sexist, and a lot of people think she's very empowering, and a lot of people think she's just like sort of like, you know, a male power fantasy object, you know, so where do you ladies stand on all that?
Well, since you mentioned my name, I guess I'll go first.
Yeah.
I got into Wonder Woman as a young kid. I was probably 8 or 9 at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was really empowering for me personally, because, you know, if you find my pictures on the internet or stuff, I'm really tall and very athletic build. I did competitive sports for a huge portion of my childhood and then adolescent life. And that was something that, you know, I got teased for doing.
Oh,
like everyone always thinks the jocks, like, but as a woman, like, oh, she's taller than the boys. Oh, she could beat up the boys. Nobody's going to want to. So it was like very much in that context of, oh, you're a woman. You're not supposed to be like that.
Oh.
So like growing up, that was pretty difficult for me. And then there was kind of the added element of my dad wasn't around for a big part of my childhood.
Uh-huh.
So having this character, which I found, we had a family friend who donated like a bunch of his old comic books, and he was cleaning out his like garage one day and just was like, hey, I think your kids might like this. So my mom, it was me and my sister and my mom. So we were like a little mini Themyscira into ourselves already. And in that box were some kind of old copies of George Perez's run of Wonder Woman.
Yes.
And right. And so like, I'm like looking through them and there's like this crazy mash of DC and Marvel and all the stuff. And I'm reading through them. And then there's like this character who I feel is like me.
Uh-huh.
Like on the page, she's there with her mom and her Amazon sisters, and she's in Man's World, and it's a little awkward, but she still does her best. And like always it does what like she thinks is right. And she's a kind person, but she can also really kick ass. And that was just like a transformative moment for me in like, hey, I'm okay as I am. Like I can be taller than the boys and still be amazing and beautiful and be worthwhile and things like that. So that was kind of where it all started for me.
Oh, that's great. That's a really great story. What about you, Raina or Lauren? Any sort of input on your end?
It's funny, Kim. A lot of things that you just said really resonate with me too, right? I'm super tall, 6 feet, right? I've always been taller than the boys, always kicked their, you know, but in sports and whatnot. And so, yeah, to see Wonder Woman, right, as a kid, right, in the cartoon form, comic book form, it is kind of a balance in trying to negotiate her as a powerful woman, and then also like that she is a little, I mean, she's very sexualized, right? And even like other, you know, like Robot Chicken and other people that parody her, right? Like that's the kind of joke, either that she is the highly sexualized, or the other side where she's the powerful woman and all the other men are idiots, right? And so she kind of played in both worlds as far as like parody goes. But yeah, to kind of see her as somebody who sticks out as a powerful woman character among a bunch of characters that were men, and then also not somebody who was a villain, right? Because I really loved Catwoman, and she was badass, but she was still a villain.
Yeah.
She was still bad and still sexualized, right? And so she's kind of like the one few, and to finally come back and know all that as a child and see this portrayal of how badass she is, I cried a bunch. All right. And so it's really, really cool to take your childhood and then have all that resonate and go, man, if I had this version when I was a kid, and I have a goddaughter who's 3, and like one of my instant thoughts was like, man, I can't wait till she's old enough to see this version of it, to like have an even stronger, you know, representation of a strong, badass hero woman.
Yeah. I actually... my goddaughter just turned 12, and I had like the best, I'm like, I'd already seen it twice, and I was like, I cried both times, and then taking her was like such amazing experience, and it was just amazing. So yeah, I'm glad you brought up your goddaughter. That's a huge thing.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
How about you, Lauren?
You know, I've been thinking about this in preparation for the podcast, because I feel like I have sort of two stages of my life with Wonder Woman. I have now with this movie, and I have when I was very, very young. It's one of my first memories, and I really sort of let it go, I think, in the middle, not out of any sort of malice or forgetting about it. It just was something that was not in my my forefront or my view. So I've been really thinking about it, and there's something about, we always talk about representation, right? I mean, it's very important that she's a woman, but sometimes it can even be the smallest, when you're very small, of seeing yourself on screen. And when I was growing up, there were a lot of blondes.
Uh-huh.
A lot of blondes, very, very Aryan. You know, I'm very Jewish. I sort of joke I have immigrant looks. very dark hair. And I was very into Wonder Woman, and I was very into Snow White.
Uh-huh. Oh,
very different characters, but it was that small being just varying of going, oh, that's me, that looks like me. And I even, little superficial there, but when Lois Lane became a redhead, I was like, you're taking away my brunettes, because they just always seem to have this idea of this blue-eyed blonde character. Now, taking that aside and sort of jumping to today, I was very emotional when I saw this film. And I think half of it was going back to my child and how much she had meant to me, in the Linda Carter series and in the cartoon series, where she was usually the only woman, which we've also talked about, right? And I grew up with all boys. Uh-huh. You know, we would play Star Wars and we would play Indiana Jones, and I would always, or Dukes of Hazzard. And there was always one girl. And so I had to play the girl.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, or Leia or something like that. But here was another woman who was strong and sometimes stronger than the other characters. And particularly, I think in general, I was thinking about this from any sort of layman. If you ask them, you know, who didn't know the difference between Marvel and DC, who just knew superheroes, name 3 superheroes. You would probably name Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And even in the title of her name, she's a Wonder Woman. Like it's evocative, and I think even subconsciously becomes even more important to women. I mean, when sort of digressing a bit, when I went to the screening that I went to on Thursday, I mean, not only were there grown women who were dressed up, there were little girls in costume with capes, and I got so emotional. Like it means something to women, not just because of who she is, I think because of what her name represents as well.
That's amazing. What you just said. Yeah. I mean, what everyone has just said. I mean, it's really interesting as a man, you know, I have my own thoughts about the character, but listening to all 3 of you, I mean, I'm really blown away by what this, I mean, I know that she's an icon, obviously, at this point, but just listening to the way that you have all sort of taken her on or interpreted her, like, this is some really amazing, you know, eye-opening stuff for me.
Well, that's interesting then, too. May I ask you, like, what's your experience with Wonder Woman then, as a man?
Well,
we're saying.
Well, for me, it's a little, I think I have a little bit in common with Kimmy. Actually, my father passed away when I was really young, and I was raised by my mother primarily, and my grandmother. I had two uncles too that really helped, but I didn't really have like a father figure around, you know, neither. And as to whether my appreciation for Wonder Woman stems from that, I did sort of growing up have more female friends than guy friends. You know, I did sort of, there was sort of an understanding, and this is of what sort of like women went through a little more than I would say like my other male friends or had to deal with. And I was just looking it up. I remember of a big point in my growing up when sort of like Dan Quayle was like talking about like single women should not be raising, you know, children on their own, and it was wrong for them. I remember being very, very angry about that because I'm like, you're talking about my mom, and my mom didn't have a choice, you know? And
right.
So, but my history with this character, my joke is that Linda Carter was very much the woman who made me realize I liked girls. Because she was very much sort of, I mean, she is this very beautiful, statuesque woman. And as a little boy, I remember, you know, I think I saw them first run because I'm old and I'm that old. I remember seeing her and just being like, wow, she is like amazing. And, you know, you go back and subconsciously, it's not just because she's beautiful, but she's sort of taking charge. She's like standing in the foreground. And the one big thing I've always said about the Linda Carter show, especially, you know, how goofy it is, you look at it now and there's elements. But Linda Carter really stepped into that costume and, you know, kind of came forward, and to me is very much a lot of times the only person that's really taking it seriously, you know.
Yeah,
like, I'm inhabiting this, while Lyle Wagner is kind of sort of like you know, and all the men are kind of like stumbling around a little bit. It's very interesting to me how the reason that show works is because she's like, I'm Wonder Woman and I'm taking charge of this and I'm taking it very seriously. And as to whether that's like a reality, you know, what she was thinking when she was doing it, I don't know, but that's what I see. And then the other big thing, which Kimmy alluded to before, was very much the sort of, I was a huge George Perez fan. For anyone who doesn't know, George Perez is like an amazing comic book artist. I mean, he's just so highly regarded in the comic book field. And I think I had seen his work on Teen Titans and had heard he was going to work on Wonder Woman. And being a fan, I picked up the very first issue, you know, at the newsstand. And I have a very distinct memory of one of my male friends being like, Wonder Woman? Like, what do you... And I was like, shut up. It's George Perez. I'm going to read it. And then just being blown away by how well George Perez had really recrafted everything and just made her this like really strong, independent, powerful character, you know, regardless of whether she was kind of male or female. Like, I didn't care. I was just like, I'm all in, you know. And from that point on, because of George Perez and, you know, Linda Carter, but more George Perez, I really became like a huge fan of the character. I mean, I have like two or three maquettes of her in my office. You know, I have several, you know, comics and collections. So, you know, for me, she's just always kind of been there. And I think, as Lauren alluded to, like, she's an icon. She is the female superhero icon, you know, and stands there with, you know, Batman and Superman as probably being, you know, one of the most popular characters on the planet.
Yeah. Well, and George Perez did such a great job. Like, she'd been through so much, like, just drama. Like, he depowered her, like, in the 60s, like, the Maude Wonder Woman, where she, like, had no powers for a while and stuff like that. And George Perez really brought her back to what most people know her as today, where she has that really strong tie to the Greek pantheon, and there's, like, magic, and, like, the gods are active in her life, and, you know, Themyscira is like this magical place. And depending on what run you're looking at, she either has a relationship or she had to leave and is never allowed to come back, and things like that. And she's just this awesome, like, often when I talk about the DC Trinity, like, the thing is like, she's the only one of them. And occasionally she does have a secret identity, that she's Diana Prince, depending on where you're running. But most of the time, and especially in more modern incarnations of her, she is just Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
While Superman is actually Clark Kent, and he kind of puts on the cape and he becomes Superman. Underneath it all, he's really Clark Kent. And then you've got Batman, who's actually Batman, and then sometimes pretends to be Bruce Wayne when he needs to. Like, she's the only one who is herself always, which is such an interesting thing, and such a, I think, kind of really drills down to the core of her being about truth and honesty and who she is as a person.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you mentioned. I'm sorry. Did Rena have something to say? Or Lauren?
Oh, no. Sorry. Yeah. No, I was just saying that was really interesting. Since we are pausing, do you mind if I just throw in a little something about Linda Carter that I wanted to say?
Absolutely.
Yeah, do it.
Sure. I'm learning more about the comics now, more recently, as, you know, sort of delving back into this. So I really am more familiar with broadcast or television. And something that you were talking about, Linda Carter, that I think really made her stand out is that she has this presence of intelligence.
Yeah.
And it just sort of breeds through, and whether it is what she was thinking or just sort of the what she projects as a human being, it took it. Because I'm sure, I mean, I don't know that much about the history of the series because I was so young, but it was, you know, trying, I'm sure, to be like the Bionic Woman, to be like Charlie's Angels. And with any other actress, it would have just been that, sort of that camp that Lyle Wagner is playing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's something that I think was very important about Gail, if, you know, taking it to today, is that she has that same presence. She has that same sort of intelligence and vulnerability that comes through, that is so earnest, that with another actress would have not worked.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite things, like, not to be spoilery. Are we doing spoilers?
No,
do we have a rule about this?
We're going to spoil.
Okay.
I always spoil.
Okay.
Because I have stuff I want to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that in the movie they made her so well-read and so well-educated.
Yeah.
And it's a great balance for her kind of naivete in man's world, but she has like this incredible classic education and can speak like hundreds of languages. And I just loved that they kept that in there and they kept that balance in there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, going back a little bit to just what you were talking before about like Superman and Batman, it's really interesting that you mentioned that, and I don't know that I've ever really thought about it, but you're right that Diana, very much like with the armor and the costume and everything, she really embraces the whole embodiment of Wonder Woman, where you get the idea of with Batman and Superman that there's always this sort of like weird split personality going on. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm Clark Kent, I'm Superman, I'm Clark Kent, I'm Superman, you know, I'm really Batman, but I'm also Bruce Wayne, you know, like they're trying to be two separate people. Like in more modern incarnations, there's none of that sort of like schizophrenia that the men in sort of like indulge in, you know what I mean? Where it's, I'm Wonder Woman, I'm Diana, I am both one and the same, and my strength arises from both. And there's none of this sort of like hemming and hawing as to who she is, which I guess I'd never really thought about that. That's an amazing point.
Yeah. And
who she is. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, she doesn't have to find out who she is. She's always been this person.
Yeah.
Whereas Bruce Wayne had to find to be Batman. He started off as Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Clark Kent started off as Clark Kent and then discovered this. She's the only one that was taught from birth, this is who you are. This is, you know, what your place is in the world. And there's a confidence in that.
Yeah,
so Diana Prince is, if she does, you know, I'm actually on another note, and we can talk more about that later if you want. I'm obsessed with secret identities. I find it fascinating. Personality with privacy, and it's a really interesting dynamic, and I often sometimes find the stories with that a little more interesting at times. That's why I love origin stories.
Yeah.
But she didn't have to find herself. These men did not, they weren't born or, you know, came to the planet as Superman and Batman. They discovered those people and maybe are still trying to find those people. She from the get-go knew exactly who she was.
That's an amazing point. God,
yeah.
I love this podcast.
So good.
You ladies are opening up my mind. Raina, are you still there? I just want to make sure we're not leaving
you out. No, I'm still there. I'm taking it all in. And I was just going to say, there is still a little bit of discovery that, you know, she doesn't completely know who she is as she kind of goes through and tries to figure out, you know, the secrets that her mom and her aunts aren't telling her. And so, there's not, like, the identity, like, schizophrenia going on, like, Batman or Superman, but there's still, like, the part of discovering herself that she goes through. Yeah.
And that's in the movie. I mean, depending on your, and depending on which version and which origin kind of like collection you're reading, that is like in varying, that's there in varying ways. Like George Perez, like there's none of that. Like she's trained as an Amazon. Yeah. All the Amazons receive the same training. She's the best of the best because she was blessed by the gods, but she's always known that. And then she, what happens in the comics, if you're not familiar, there's actually a competition to become the champion of the Amazons to go into man's world. So she battles with the rest of the people who want to be the champion, and she is victorious because, you know, she's awesome. And and then she's chosen then by, you know, by trial by combat, basically, to be the, you know, the pinnacle of the Amazonian civilization. And she's chosen then to go back with Steve Trevor to, you know, the man's world, to, for whatever reason in that particular iteration of the comics, is the reason she goes back. So it's kind of an interesting thing. And I like that they added, they did elements of that story a little bit, but also they brought in some of the New 52, if anybody's up on that.
Yeah, that's where I was like, I'm not a fan of the New 52 stuff, but go ahead.
Yeah.
It's not that.
So that was kind of where they added in the element of her, spoiler, being a demigod or god, and having the electric powers, which we kind of knew because we saw, and there was a lot of speculation with Batman versus Superman when that giant like explosion bubble happens that protects them. There was a lot of speculation on Wonder Woman fanatic sites, like, did she cause that power to, you know, or was that her just deflecting Doomsday's blast that caused that? So we then find out, yeah, she's got that power and she's got kind of that tie-in. I like how they did it. I like parts of Wonder Woman in the New 52. I don't like parts of it. But I think they did a good job of balancing the more traditional origin story of her and bringing in that element as well to really kind of up her power base.
Yeah.
It kind of leaves you wondering, like in Batman versus Superman, it's like, so why didn't she just kick Doomsday's ass by herself?
Yeah, well, that movie's a mess. And if anybody's listened to our episode about that,
Don't get me started on that.
The less said about Batfleck v Man of Steel, I just, the better. But and not to veer off into too much of a New 52 thing, but one of the things that very much disappointed me about that run was the sort of introduction of her, like, being a demigod and sort of like, hey, Zeus snuck down from Olympus and impregnated my mother. Whereas before, it was very much sort of, in George Perez's iteration, it's very much sort of a creation of women by women without really needing male anything, you know, dependency on male anything. And from what I've read in a lot of interviews, you know, a lot of people at DC were like, well, you know, her being made out of clay, that's just goofy. You know, that's just silly. And I'm like, yeah, but comic books are silly. Like, come on, we're talking about guys that put on capes and go out into alleys and bat costumes. You know, I mean, why can't we just embrace that and not have this sort of, you know, it very much put me off. Like when I first read that sort of like first issue or first couple issues, and the DC 52 is something that was my jumping off point as far as like weekly comics. But that was something that was very precious to me in the Perez run. And I was very much kind of like, I was a little bit disappointed that they introduced that into this movie, but I was like, you know, whatever, it's part of the history now. What am I? I'm way past the point of being too old for fanboy rage on a lot of things. So, you know, I'm just like not, but let's talk about the movie. I mean, let's actually talk about, you know, this movie, because it seems like all three of you really loved it. I would really love to hear all your takes on it because, you know, I saw it and I definitely have an opinion of my own. What did you ladies think?
Oh my God, I loved it. Like, oh my God, so much love.
It was great. cried several times.
It was, yes.
For me, it was a mind-blowing experience.
Wow.
From one hand, being just an exciting movie in itself, and then also being myself outside of the movie, being in a movie theater with a mixed crowd of men and women who are both equally excited about seeing a woman starring in a action movie. And that meant even more to me. I mean, there was one point, and I forget if it was the first time she goes through no man's land, but there was one point where this big fight thing that she did got a huge like applause.
Yes.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Which I've never really seen in in a movie before, in a play, but not a movie. And just like excitement and like, yeah, and not just like only women who were excited about it, that it was something that we could all enjoy. And I went with a mixed group of people and we all loved it. And I also appreciated the fact that it here she is, a kick-ass woman, but she also had an arc that she went on. She had a journey, which is why I think it was really great that, or I understand why they added that she discovers at the end that she is the, I was going to say demon, because you said demigod, but I mean the god killer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she goes on a journey in several different ways, and one of it is discovering what her true power really is, as well as discovering what she as a, I don't want to say human, I know she's not a human, let's say metahuman. Taking it from, I just watched all her scenes in Batman Superman. So that's you know, in my fourth. Oh, now I forgot where I was. But I guess what I'm saying is that to me, I had a dual experience where I loved it just as a film because it was exciting, but also because of the experience that I was having. And it's a little hard, I think, to divide that. I mean, I may need to see it again as well. but also the fact that she was a person.
Right.
You saw her go on this journey and discover things about men, about the world, and the humor. The humor also was just so important, and it really was balanced on that line. And here you had also a love interest where I might have normally said, like, you know, I'd be okay if she didn't have a love interest, even though I know Steve Trevor is important to the story. It fit because it went along with her journey that she discovered different kinds of love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, that's and interesting.
She, you know, there was romantic love, right? But there was also the love of her mother and her aunt and the friend that she was with.
I
was very impressed by Steve Trevor. I just thought he loved her. You would think, you know, in a lot of male sort of fantasies that a man supposedly, you know, can't take a woman taking center stage and saving him. And that's why he seemed like he loved her courage as well as who she was, because he knew her for a very short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm that's not, just I, movies.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. You know, like I always sort of hate, and I guess hate is a strong word, this sort of criticism. Oh, well, I wish they had more of this, and therefore I hated it. Well, yeah. No, you wanted more of something. That means it was good. Sure.
Yeah.
Did I want more of them together and I would like them to get to know each other? But yeah, it's a movie and we got to bring her to modern times and this is her origin story. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
I'm glad they didn't. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I actually was glad they didn't have more of it. I mean, I was like, I have
more
never been
romance?
A giant.
More of
yeah,
the romance?
Yeah. I'm glad they didn't have more of the romance.
Yeah, me too.
Like, it was like an appropriate amount. Like, and I've never been a giant Chris Pine fan. I think he did a really great job here, though. It's a hard role to play, especially if you've been playing leading men your whole life, because you have to kind of be the leading man stereotype, but you have to be a sidekick at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think he did a good job of kind of balancing that and letting her, I mean, and in the way they did the fight choreography and everything, like she takes center stage and they're kind of like her backup. Like anyone who's familiar with like online gaming, she's definitely the tank and she goes through and they follow up with some helper sniper fire and like support. But she is the battle happening and she is the fighter happening. So I love that they didn't pull back. And I love there's the scene in the alley where she basically kicks everybody's butt and he's like, yeah, and then like hits him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's definitely not like demasculate. You know, they don't pull away.
All.
Yeah. But she is definitely in like a whole nother league of fighting and he respects that and is cool with that, which is a neat balance. But I'm glad like through the course of it, she, like you were saying, she finds the importance of love because that makes such an important moment at the end. When she's, you know, in that battle with Ares, she's angry, and Patty Jenkins did an incredible job of building up her frustration through the film. If you watch her fight style through the film, at first she's very much like, when she's fighting humans, it's very much, oh, I hit them or I, you know, disarm them and things like that. But as she goes, then she starts using her sword and you start actually seeing her hit people with the sword. Yeah. And then there's that moment in the final battle where she just lets loose and it just like walks through that platoon of people. I actually don't know military terms, so it might not be a platoon. It's a group of guys. Yeah. And she just like tears them apart. And you see this build as she is introduced on Themyscira, probably to the first death she's ever known, because the Amazons are immortal. So watching that fight on the beach in the beginning, that's very emotional for her.
Yeah.
Like people are dying. People she loves die. And then to go and then see, oh, there's, you see her walking through London. It's a baby. Oh, she's never seen a baby before. And now she's seeing children for the first time and they're going through the awful, you know, situation of World War One, which is one of the most devastating and actually like caused more deaths than World War Two, if my history is correct, I believe.
And
having her see that. And then finally, like the loss of, you know, people she cares about, like she's in love with at the end there, just kind of sets her off. But then there's that moment where she's like takes a breath and she remembers, she sees like her other compatriots who are still alive over there huddled about to die, but hugging each other, saying goodbye right before the end. And she's seeing like, oh, there's still good here. And she thinks about Steve, though, even though he loves her and could have made a selfish decision, went and did the right thing anyway.
Yeah.
So I feel like while it was minimal in the story and no characters make, up until that moment, no characters are making choices based on that budding romance. Like they are all still doing what they need to do to end this war, to do what they think is right. It's not, oh, well, I don't know if I want to go to war. I want to be with Steve. Like I was really scared it was going to be like that, or that she was going to leave Themyscira because she was in love with him. I was like, oh God, please don't make it that. And they didn't, which is like, I'm so thankful for that. Like so thankful.
And
that's
like
exactly what I was thinking.
That's not what I was looking for.
Yes.
I just meant that it made me want to know more about their relationship because from a character point of view, because it exactly, they only have this movie to do it. So you don't get as much of that. Yeah. I mean that I liked the two of them and therefore I wanted more, but I thought it was fine. Yeah. And like I said, like in normally I wouldn't want her to even have a love interest in this kind of movie. And I was, that's one thing I love about Star Wars is at least I'm hoping that Rey looks like she's not going to have a love interest. And I'm okay with that, even though I love a good romance. Mm-hmm. But one, because it fits into her journey, but it just, I would have liked to have seen more character development, but I understand also that that's not what this movie is about.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Raina, I feel like you chomping at the bit wanting to make a comment. So no need to be polite on this podcast. Jump right in. I feel like you want to say something.
Appreciate that. No, it's a good group of strong vocal women. So I appreciate that for sure. No, like I was watching it too. I have very similar kind of feelings as to you two, right? Like that it started to boil up where I'm like the ick factor was coming, like, oh no, please, please don't make this romantic. Please don't. And then it didn't boil over, but I felt like it wasn't needed, but like, sure. Cause then she needs to know, you know, what love is and the different type of love, like you all were talking about. But I am glad that she didn't just fall in love. And that was like the whole, you know, rest of the story. Yeah. But I was a little bit disappointed that she fell in love that quickly with the character that was trying to be her hero and still trying to, you know, be masculine with her and kind of take over and, you know, no, I got it, or stand over here and I'll protect you. And so there was like him trying to negotiate who she was at the beginning before he finally realized, oh, you're taking care of me. And then he still kind of takes a heroic stance at the end, kind of, sort of. But there's something also to talk about the emotion that we've been brought up about, how that emotion fuels her fighting, where she sees all the devastation, she sees the people dying, you know, she's in love, but then that, you know, is that emotion, are we saying like, it does the movie saying that like, that the woman has to have all that emotion to fuel her fight? Because then I start thinking about, okay, so does Batman use emotion that way? And does that emotion help him in his fights, or does that lead him to his detriment? And is Wonder Woman using that emotion in a more positive way to kick ass? So that's just something I'm sitting here pondering.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. I would say like definitely. But yeah, I mean, I think that's also like DC's Trinity. obviously I've thought about this like way too much, but like that, right?
Yeah.
So like Batman is fueled by his loss and his grief and his anger, like his desire for revenge on the world.
Don't get me started on Batman, but go ahead.
Right? Anyway. So like, I think all of them are fueled by emotions, and Diana, it's like the feelings of love and wanting to spread like what she knows from her kind of like utopian upbringing and wanting people to be better. And you see, that kind of like manifest itself kind of near the end. At first she's like, yes, I will come and I will kill Ares and everyone will be happy. And then she kind of like loses that faith that people are good. And then she's kind of like, no, you know, they're not good. Like, you know, at the end, they're not good like I thought they were, but they are still good. Yeah. And they, you know, and so there's still that hope there. I think that's one of the things that's always motivated Wonder Woman, is like love and hope for a better future.
Like, I like that they still stuck her through the hero's journey, where there was a part in the movie where she's like, no, forget this. You're right. Like, they are creating this destruction. Maybe I will, you know, kill what's her name? The Dr. Gas. You know, just destroy human beings, because that's who should be destroyed. And they just did that, like a glimpse of that. They didn't really like create a big scene, which I didn't think was necessary. I like that it was just a moment of her contemplating, yeah, no, let's go this way. And then, no, let's not.
Yeah.
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 No, and I was going to add on to what Kimmy was saying, was it just reminded me that as the movie went further, I was really afraid that we were going to find out that there was no Ares at all.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that would, to me, make her look kind of like an idiot, and and also sort of say something that I hoped the movie was not trying to say. So I was glad on one front that there really was an Ares, but also this sort of great moment when she, and I forget his name, but the Danny Houston character, when she kills him and he's in, and it doesn't change.
Yeah.
Right.
And it seemed like such a great metaphor for life, that like you think like, I'm going to, you know, particularly when you're young and naive, I'm going to do this one thing. This one thing is going to change my life, and then my life is going to be perfect, and everything's going to be great. And life doesn't work that way.
Yeah,
it's too it's more complex than that, and it's smaller little increments of things, or we could say even doing small little moments of good, not just one big gesture.
Yeah,
and I love that it was saying that. And then also from a story point of view, when we find out who Ares really is, I gasped. I was
Really?
Okay.
I saw that. Like, the minute he walked in frame, and like the very, I think it was like the second act of the film, you're like in the parliament thing. I was like,
I'm a sap.
That's really interesting. I have thoughts, but anyway, you guys go ahead. You ladies go ahead. But no, I find it really interesting. Sorry, just sort of interject, because I love everything that everyone is saying. But the moment where she kills the German officer who she thinks is Ares, and she's like, wait a minute, what's going on? Like, for me, that was very much like maturity, like growing up, like like, life isn't exactly the way that I pictured it in my head, and everything doesn't, just like you were saying, Lauren. And for me, it was very much what they've done in the comics with her, where she's very naive and she doesn't know sort of like maybe the ways of the world, like, you know, maybe everybody else. And then all of a sudden it's like this eye-opening thing where it's like, wait a minute, this isn't everything, like you said, like we all go through, like, this isn't everything I thought it was, and this doesn't solve everything, and there's no simplistic solution. I thought that was a really, really great scene in the movie.
Yeah. I love that too, because there's a great kind of partnership between her and besides the romance between her and Steve Trevor. Like, she's got like this vast amount of just knowledge. She can communicate with everybody. She, you know, like, has all this battle like ability and tactical knowledge. And then he's got like the street smarts, which she really needs. Mm-hmm. So he definitely has something that assists her. So he seems like he has a functioning part in her arc, which I really also appreciate. It's not just like, ugh, we need a man. Like, she needs those street smarts in order to be successful. Like, he gets her to where she needs to be so she can be most effective, which is kind of a great role for that sidekick, you know, supporting character.
Yeah.
He has that line, and I'm sure going to butcher it. Doesn't he say something like, when she can't hear him, that, you know, I can save today, but you can save tomorrow?
Yeah.
Like,
but you can save the world.
the world. Yeah, exactly. Like, he doesn't fulfill what usually would be the female, you know, equivalent in a male movie. Is he has, what's the word I'm looking for? He actually fits a purpose in the plot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he can't be replaced with a lamp.
Oh, wow.
Oh, agency. He has agency.
Yes. Yeah, it's very interesting. Chris Pine, it was funny. In the very first scene where he's tied up with the lasso, he was kind of, you know, he's known for playing Captain Kirk. That was like his first big break. And I felt like he was really channeling his inner William Shatner there when he was like, I can't. Like, there was a little bit of like overdoing it there, which I thought it was like some kind of maybe inside joke they were playing a little bit. But I really was very impressed with their chemistry and how well they played off of each other and how, you know, with him in a way, how surprised he always seemed, like, what is going on, you know, which is an element that I feel a lot of big movies don't play into it. And even with Gal Gadot, if I pronounce that correctly, I'm known for mangling last names. I apologize. with her, you know, the sort of wide-eyed, you know, very much like, wow, this is amazing. And for Wonder Woman, it's very much like the regular world is amazing. But to him, it's like, what is this island full of women? And, you know, they're amazing and they're strong. And she's not like anyone else I've ever met. A lot of that stuff really worked well for me. And it's stuff that they don't interject into like really great movies. I mean, it's a big complaint I have where, you know, there'll be like a giant spaceship coming out of the clouds. And a lot of the time the male heroes just sort of like, yeah, okay, let's go kick ass, you know?
Right.
And that's not how you would react at all. I don't care how strong a man or woman or whatever you are. You would be like, oh my God, there's a giant alien coming. You know,
yeah.
You'd be freaking out. But
yeah, they did a great job with kind of flipping that fish out of water role.
Yeah.
Like at first he's on Themyscira and he's like, oh my God, the water's glowing blue. And who are you guys? And the gods. Okay. Great, no problem. And like, obviously with problem, like I'm being sarcastic if people are
interested. Yeah.
but then, you know, then they come in and she's very much in control. And she's like, well, it is our duty to defend the world. And he's like, cool, okay. And then they kind of flip that. And then she's the fish out of water. And like, I don't understand. Like, why are they holding hands? Well, you know, all these things. So it's they do a great job. And I think that also brings balance to their relationship that isn't necessarily there usually when there's a male hero and a female love interest.
Yeah.
And you're going back to the lasso scene that you were talking about. I think it was a really sort of first great introduction to the lasso.
Yeah.
Because some people would say, I wouldn't, that some of her accoutrement can be a little cheesy, which is another reason why I think it's been so hard to adapt this particular thing. That scene made it funny, but also showed the consequences of it. Because it was funny, but he's like, this is really hot and it hurts. And I shouldn't be telling you this because I'm a spy. And so after that, you were like, yeah, this is legitimate.
Yeah.
It's not funny at all.
Yeah.
Right.
They did a great way of kind of slowly introducing you to all those things like her bracers that deflect bullets and things like that in a way that you slowly got it. And the way they gave her tiara, even the symbolism of it being her Aunt Antiope's, was like so perfect. I loved that. And so like all these things that, a lot of, you know, people have shied away from these things. In 2013, I was part of a group. We did a fan film of Wonder Woman. It was like a mini trailer for what we wanted. We thought a Wonder Woman, a live action thing could actually be. And that was one of the hardest things as we were going through. It's like, all right, how do these things work in the real world? Like off of this, you know, four color comic page, you know, why is she wearing a tiara? What would her armor look like? But still be identifiable. And they did such an amazing job of slowly introducing all those things that could be sort of corny and still making it really work, which I think again is back to like the great storytelling of Patty Jenkins and making those moments lighthearted. But then when you see those things in action later, you're like, oh, cool, I totally buy that.
Yeah, and then making those items even more badass, right?
Yeah.
Cheesy, and that there was a crescendo to like, and now I get all my weaponry to go kick ass in the second part.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like someone online had referred to her wrist guards as bracelets, and and I was like, but they're not. Like, everything that she's wearing is functional.
Yeah,
they are protective coating. She's wearing armor. They're not bracelets.
Yeah.
And that's so important that, like, there's nothing on her that is not there for a reason.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think all of that stuff plays back to sort of the 40s and the 50s, where they might have been referred to as bracelets. And this is her tiara, and it's very feminine and stuff like that. Sure. Whereas throughout the years, especially maybe the last 20 or 30 years, again, George Perez, thank you, you know, very much sort of like, these are not just bracelets. Like, this is weaponry. She's not like some silly woman on Paradise Island, right?
It's funny when I was watching it, too, right? Like, I saw all the women, right, in their, you know, skirts, if you will, and my first kind of critical thought was like, God, why do they got to be in skirts? Why do they got to be fighting in sexy little outfits, yada yada, right? And then as I watched it, it's like, okay, right, so it was the times, right? You know, it's reflective of right, that period of time, sure. But then to keep watching it and go, right, okay, but it's armor, but it's functional, because they got to do all those big kicks and get up and on horses and whatnot. And if, you know, we're wearing something else, maybe it wouldn't be as, you know, easy to do all those crazy moves and flipping through the airs and not.
Right.
And, like, and compare them to
show us that, right? Outfit,
it's a lot more armor, right? It's a lot more leathery. It's a lot more badass, even if she's still in a skirt, right? It's a lot more purposeful. And then to transition to her, like, what I can only call is, like, her pretty woman scene when she's trying on all the outfits.
Yeah,
I love that, because it's like, I can't kick ass in a dress. Like, what is
that? Like, not just a dress. I mean, I think it was interesting on many fronts, and I guess eventually we can talk more about the change of setting, is that, you know, during World War One, the outfits, and I mean, I love when she points to the corset and she goes, oh, is this the armor? Like, it's a lot more confined than even in World War II, which still had some, you know, foundation garments for sure, but not the constraints that those clothes would have to fight.
Absolutely. Well, and coming from like a costuming point of view, I do a lot of historical costuming. That's actually how I learned to costume before I got into cosplay. World War One was actually when, like, full-blown corsets, like we think about in the 1800s, Victorian times, World War One was when those slowly started going out of fashion because of the lack of metal. So when she walks up to those corsets, like, we are still in a time period that's just starting to change, since it's like near the end of World War One. Like, those corsets would just be out of fashion because the metal for the boning in them was so hard to get that they started going more towards what we see later on in World War II, with materials that are easier to get, like different types of boning that aren't made of metal, simply because of the war effort, they needed all that metal for the war effort. So that was I don't know, I'm a total nerd. Sorry, I totally went off in a separate direction.
I love historical stuff.
Yeah, it's really great too. Like, I'm glad you brought up like the piece of World War One. You know, I'm in my real life, I'm an educator, and I worked as a history teacher for many years. World War One is really the turning point from historical warfare to modern warfare.
Yeah.
And like, you see, I mean, they still had cavalry with swords in the beginning of World War One, and then by the end, it's all like long range tanks, and there is some still like infantry fighting, but it's completely changed the nature of war by the end of that war. So I, even though I was a little bit, because traditionally Wonder Woman is set in World War II, I was a little bit hesitant. I was like, why did they change to World War One? Yeah, I was actually really pleased with it the more I thought about it, and then seeing how it played out, because it's almost like her transformation from Themyscira to the modern world is mirrored by that of the war, where they're coming from, they're coming from these like horses and all these things to, you know, giant tanks and all these, you know, toxic gases that killed people and things like that. So it's I don't know, to me, I really loved that kind of parallel, whether it was intentional or not.
Yeah.
The biggest scene for me that really sort of drove it home for me that I like, oh, this actually is probably a great idea to do this in World War One, is when she's in the war room.
Yeah.
Now, I know that women, you know, were in the military in World War II, but wouldn't necessarily have the same positions. But still, it wouldn't have been odd to have a woman in that room.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Or a woman in uniform in general, whether she was on the front lines, obviously not, but she would be there. And so it was much more stark and made her stand out more when, you know, everyone stops because there's a woman in the room. So in that sense, I mean, there's even that sort of, you know, Lucy Davis, the secretary, I can't think of her name, gives that sort of off thing. Oh, maybe we'll get the vote soon.
Yeah, Etta Candy, yeah.
Yeah, like the sort of, you know, the context of it.
Yeah.
Although I went with someone who didn't know until we told him that it was World War One.
I won't
say who he was. But and I think it comes from also just being so used to it taking place in World War II.
Right.
That's Wonder Woman. And if you're not, you know, as familiar with costuming as maybe, you know, some of us here are, or the historical context, I mean, my thought was, I was like, there were no swastikas.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the cross.
Yeah.
But I think we're also used to it being during that time. And there aren't many movies that actually depict what happened in World War I. World War II is just a lot popular.
Well,
you know, I hate to say that, like, a war is popular. But it, I mean, it's a time that has, you know, a lot of nostalgia for people, and whether they lived it or not, with the music. Mm-hmm. It's not a story that is usually told of World War I.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad they did it. And I was very hesitant because I was so used to her being in World War II, and I am fascinated with that era too.
Yeah.
But I also think that it made it distinctly different from Captain America, which is very important because it came first, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like,
I think that.
Oh no, go ahead.
Go ahead. I think that also gives her so much time to become who she's going to end up being in Justice League too. And I love that there's that open-endedness of her. Like, I would love to see her, you know, Patty Jenkins this week signed on for Wonder Woman number 2.
Oh,
so maybe
great.
That one takes place in World War II. You know, there's so many options, you know, of seeing how she grows as a person and as a character. It's also, one of the things I love about it being in World War I era too, is we see when she gets to London, like, all the coal. And London, especially during that time, was so polluted. Like, people died because there was so much ash and coal and chemicals in the air. It actually would trap those things down low, so people would suffocate. So there were, you know, if you're familiar with the beginning of different things, so it was really a dirty, gross kind of time.
Yeah.
And I love that because it gives, like, the perfect excuse for the color palette that Zack Snyder likes.
Okay.
Which I hate. I really dislike it.
Yeah.
But it's like a good scientific reason for them to go from this beautiful, kind of what I call the Wizard of Oz moment, where you're going from black and white to color. You're doing the opposite in this movie. You're going from color to the Snyderverse color palette, which I'm glad that they had, like, an actual reason for everything looking a little dingy. I'm like, yes, that's London, World War One. It was super dingy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I loved that.
It's interesting. The only point that I wanted to make myself about the World War One, setting it in World War One, was very much to what Cammy and Lauren's points are, which is, I think World War One was much more ambiguous as far as, like, who the sort of good guys were, who the antagonists were. It's a war that just dragged on because of the advances in technology, and, like, actually kind of officially ended because, you know, everyone was just tired of fighting and running out of resources, quite honestly, to just fund the war machine. So I really felt like that Wonder Woman, you know, dropped into the middle of this was very much sort of like looking at war from all, you know, points, especially when she sort of addresses the Native American character, and she's like, mm-hmm. well, who did that to your people? And he's like, well, his people, you know. I think that World War II is very much, like Lauren said, is like the popular war, or the war where we actually sort of, you know, however you want to look at it, we're going overseas to fight a dictator, you know, a guy in particular, Adolf Hitler. That's the way it's sort of, you know, seen. Whereas World War One, even today, people are like, why? You know, even the sort of documentary that I kind of recommended in an email that I just started watching, that PBS American Experience started doing, called The Great War, 6 hours of World War One, which I love. I'm a history buff. But, you know, it says, is like, why did people even, it was a time of like real progress in so many things. And then all of a sudden this war starts and it's like, why did we even start this? It's ridiculous, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Well, Patty Jenkins said that was sort of a big reason why she also wanted to set it around that time, because she felt that it was paralleling what was happening now, yep. and that it was leading into a real sense of isolationism from America.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Now, reading this article, I went, oh, yeah, that makes total sense. I didn't feel like that was very present, you know, the politics in this movie, but I'm fine with that. You know, sometimes you can have thematic elements that just fit that aren't necessarily discussed. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a little vague, but it sounds like there was a lot of thought, whether it's on, you know, the screen or not, yeah. of changing the time period, and that's very important. They didn't just willy-nilly go, oh, we don't want to be like Captain America, let's just change it, which right. is what I thought. And there really was a lot of, you know, specific reasons for making the change.
Yeah.
Now, question though, does that... among the DC universe now, because I'm not, you know, don't come from the comic books, in the movie verse now, does that make her like the oldest superhero?
Well, she's always been the oldest that the
public knows about. Was she the first one?
I mean, Kimmy, you can answer that.
Well, I mean, as far as her age as a character, like, it's really ambiguous. Like, she's always kind of like depicted of in her, like, appearing in her 30s, but we get the idea. I mean, she grew up on Themyscira, this island of, you know, immortals. So she could actually be hundreds, if not thousands of years old, and we don't actually have, like, a time for that. So that's one of the things that's kind of left ambiguous in the comics, depending on which run you're looking at. There's some runs that, like, yes, she's, you know, a certain age. And there are some runs where there even are other children on Themyscira. But traditionally, she grew up as the only child of the Amazons, because as immortals, they can't have children. And then she was brought to life by the gods for Hippolyta because she wanted her so badly. So we actually don't know how old she is as a person usually.
But I guess in the public consciousness, in the sense of like in 1918, mm-hmm. she comes on the scene. Is that the first superhero that they've ever seen in the movieverse? Is just that made me think of something. That is she the first time that becomes a thing?
I think absolutely. I mean, and I don't think that's something they set up super well in Man of Steel or any of these other things. Although it's not 100% answered, even though she shows up in World War I, we don't know, you know, if she continued that. You know, we see her at the end of Wonder Woman, but she's already back in modern times again. She flies off and does the superhero fly thing at the very, very end. But that's, again, in modern times. So we don't know. After World War I, did she go into hiding? Did she continue being a superhero?
Yeah. I noticed something that was really interesting that changed it, because I had not seen Batman vs. Superman when I saw Wonder Woman. And mm-hmm. like I said, to prep for this, I watched all her scenes in it. And in the end, she goes, I don't need to watch the rest. And at the end, at the funeral, right, she says 100 years ago, the way that she says that, it made me think that she did go away for 100 years. I mean, they don't know her.
They right. definitely made it seem like she disappears for a very long time.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that's not the case, because that does, and when I watched it at the time, that was one of the things that made me most angry. I mean, there's a long list of things that made me angry about Batman versus Superman, but that was one of the things that made me most upset, because I was like, that's not the Wonder Woman I love and know. Like, even if she was disappointed with mankind, she wouldn't just give up.
Yeah, that's a very, like, Superman Returns thing to do, you know,
like
very much. Definitely surprised me, and I agree. I hope that's not the case. But it was interesting, because I didn't go in having seen that movie. Like, I didn't get the reference of the photograph at the beginning, which was fine. I did not need to. It was clear what was happening. But to go back afterwards and watch it and find out that she had been looking for this picture and then that sort of information, I did sort of kind of like get the air taken out of me when she said that. I was like, oh, I really hope she hasn't been away for 100 years.
Right. I hope so, too.
And that would follow kind of like a journey, you know, hero journey, if she did disappear, even if we don't want her to disappear, right, where she has to go away and contemplate and think about or whatever, and then come back later to do
that's
whatever.
That's what they were doing. Like, I feel like they, at least, you know, looking at Captain America and things like that, it seems when this happens, they want to get it to modern times very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From a movie point of view.
Yeah, and I'm sort of worried about that because, again, like, I liked that, you know, the her love for Steve Trevor did kind of influence her decision, but it was not just that. It was also the love she found with comrades and wanting people to be do the right thing. So I love, again, like, I loved how minimal the love story was. If she was so broken up over his death that she couldn't face mankind anymore, I'd be super disappointed.
Yeah.
That sounds like a very Snyder thing to do, though, so I'm not, like... I'm keeping my expectations real.
Yeah, but Snyder's out now, so we can, you know.
Yeah, but
unfortunately,
I feel like that's another podcast.
This movie is very popular.
Yes.
So you could say that it was vague enough that they can come back with more movies that take place in different time periods.
Absolutely. I'm sort of hoping they just kind of like hand wave that and hope nobody remembers that.
Yeah.
No, I did read though that.
Can you hand wave Man of Steel for me too at the same time?
Oh.
I really. All right. Sorry, Lauren. I had to interject.
I couldn't get through that movie either.
Oh.
This is the first DC movie that I've been able to like sit through the whole thing.
Oh. Yeah. Well, you know.
I was really worried, actually. Like, okay, so after Man of Steel, like, I'm a huge DC fangirl. I love Marvel, but like, DC is my thing that I loved growing up. And I just watched it, and I was like, oh god, that's like, I had like the victim mentality for a minute. Like after that movie, like, oh god, that was good. It was fine. It was fine. It's 15 minutes later, like I'm in the car. I'm like, oh my god, that was so bad. I can't believe how bad that was.
No.
Why did Jonathan Kent want like a bus full of kids to die?
Yeah.
That's the worst thing ever.
No,
and so I kind of was like, yeah. And then so at the end of this, like I was really worried. Like I was lucky enough to get to go to an early screening of Wonder Woman a couple weeks ago. And I did the thing where I was like, oh god, I love that. I love that. Oh god, was it really good? Or am I doing the Man of Steel thing again? Was it really good? And I was like, okay, like an hour later, I was like, no, that was good. I really love that movie. I want to see it again. Okay, yes, that was actually good.
Can I just share with you my Man of Steel moment where I knew that we had gone off the rails and I totally had that victim moment that you're talking about where it's the moment where he refuses to save his dad from the tornado.
And
we talked about it on our podcast, and I very much, if you listen to that episode
I didn't get that far. Wait, what?
Sorry. Don't worry about it.
I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't watch it.
Don't
pretend like it doesn't happen.
Don't. But if you listen to the part-time fanboy episode on Man of Steel, it is a whole hour of me being like, yeah, that wasn't so bad. Was it? Like that was okay. Right. Like it was.
Right.
Yeah. And the moment that he does not save his dad from the tornado, I literally, like, I was sitting next to my wife, and I stood up. I literally stood up, and I was like, no! and then I had to sit back down, because there were other people in the theater, and through the whole rest of the movie, I'm like, okay, maybe I can just justify this in my head, and I can get through it, and, you know, maybe he just doesn't, and no, I couldn't do it. So I'm glad I didn't have this in this movie.
Someone did that when I saw The Force Awakens.
Oh, really?
And, I mean, I don't want to spoil another movie since we have a certain
spoil
topic,
whatever you
but
want.
We all know what the moment is.
Yeah,
And someone yelled no. They're very upset.
Yeah. I feel like we need like a Fire Zack Snyder like podcast where we can just sit and like cathartically vent to each other.
Oh my god! I mean, if you want to do that, I'm down for it.
But... I would be totally down for that. I wrote like this like 3-page article on my blog that is named Fire Zack Snyder, and it just like rips every moment of Batman versus Superman apart. I didn't even get into Man of Steel. Like,
only
oh my
thing
god!
I wouldn't want to do is kick a guy when he's down, because obviously the reason that he's leaving is a very sort of tragic reason. Although, why you took 2 months to make that decision after it happened, I don't know. But anyway.
Oh no.
Sometimes, I mean, emotions you can get to you after the fact. I mean, that's a very traumatic event, you know, and sometimes it just hits you after when you realize I'm not doing my best work.
Right.
Yeah.
Going back to doing
his best work like 4 years ago. So I don't know.
Yeah, I work with kids. I know she was a young adult. I worked with kids who are suicidal. This is something that's, you know, something I deal with a lot in my daily life.
Yeah.
So I wanted him off these movies. This is never, ever I wanted him off.
Absolutely not.
So I was, you know, but also like looking at it from a business standpoint, it's, and having worked with families through the grief process, I know families are very different in how they react to these things.
Yeah.
The timing did seem incredibly coincidental though, because this was announced literally like like YouTube did a special screening and a Q&A with Patty Jenkins. I believe it was the 19th. Yeah. And literally right around there. It was like literally like the next day after this flood of YouTubers and influencers all saw the screening of the movie, had a Q&A, and everybody adored it, which I think is why they originally it was just a Q&A with Patty Jenkins. And then I think after they had their final product, they knew they had gold. Yeah. So they added the screenings to like boost also that social media reaction. It was very close after that then he stepped back.
Yeah.
So whether that was because they wanted to have a cover reason for him to come off the movie, which is often something that they do.
Yeah.
Whether that was a, you know, I don't know if I can face another, you know, panned movie after the success of this movie or what that was. The timing did seem too coincidental to just be.
Yeah.
The family issues, though.
Kimmy, just you from what and I know. I are going to get along because you are just as cynical as I am.
I'm a terrible person. It
could also be that he had wanted to, but for exactly the reasons that Kimmy is saying, he couldn't, but now they know they're going to be okay.
Well, I feel like a lot of things have happened, and I feel like there have been calls for a lot of reshoots on Justice mm-hmm. League. I mean, we're kind of yeah. veering off into a different... I mean, there have been like two or three rounds of reshoots, and that's not a good thing. And just looking at the trailers, for me, Kimmy, I'm a big DC... Oh. I love them all, but I'm a big DC fan
it's
guy.
It's dumpster fire.
And yeah, and I've just been like, I cannot believe how badly you guys are screwing this up. So for me... I'm glad he's off. If that's what really happened, if that's why he's doing it, I feel really badly for him. I have right. not liked a movie he made since 300. I'm glad that Patty Jenkins and it looks like Joss Whedon is stepping in, you know, and hopefully they will, you know, move the ship forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I know we're still off topic, but just like literally they're combining what looks like Amazon's attack with like the Doomsday attack with the return of Superman, which are three of the biggest storylines to hit DC. I don't know how you can cover all of that in a understandable way in one movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it just, yeah. Although, you know, that is kind of coming back to Wonder Woman. A lot of critics are kind of saying that the stuff in Themyscira dragged on. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the best part. Like, I noticed there's a lot of male critics who say that, just FYI. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they're kind of like, oh, that, you know, it's like this slog of a backstory. You know, there, I think also, like, other than it just being my favorite part of the movie and being amazing, it also is setting up for Justice League yep. in many ways. So there's that payoff. While, you know, it may seem like there's a lot of kind of building of this culture, it seems like it's not only necessary to lay the foundation for who Wonder Woman is in the Wonder Woman movie, but we see in the trailers already, even though they're, you know, unfinished scenes and stuff, there's very clear Amazons fighting in Justice League. So right. I think that that's also one of the reasons that they were patient enough to take time with that, which I totally adore and love, but also it's going to pay off in other movies coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say earlier is that this is a good example of how you can do a two hour 20 minute movie and it be successful, right? Instead of trying to chop it up and make it, you know, under, you know, an hour and a half because kids' attention spans aren't going to be there, whatever. You know, this was brilliant because they did all that backstory and I think it was needed and it set up, you know, everything we needed to know about Wonder Woman to move on with the rest of the story. So yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right. Like that it's probably dude saying a blah, blah, blah backstory. Just give me to the action.
Yeah.
I want to see when, no, you needed to have all of that to make a nice cohesive movie. And it didn't feel that long to me. Right. Like at first I'm like 2 hours and 20 minutes really? That long. And by the end of it, I'm like, wow, I'm satisfied. Right. Like I could sit here and watch that again. That was dope.
Yeah.
See, I appreciated it. 'Cause for me, it felt like I was watching a World War I drama that happened to have a superhero in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, you had taken out her outfit, so to speak, you know, and the fact that we know that it's Wonder Woman, which I don't think anyone actually refers to her as that in the film, right?
Now
that
no one really says.
I was bummed about that. Yeah,
is that it felt like just like a really great World War I movie because I got character and I got story, and it has a very distinct three-act structure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
By not just, you know, what's happening, but also by visually her moving from, you know, section to section of the film.
Yeah.
So it didn't for me. In fact, I didn't know how long it was going in. I'm kind of glad I didn't. And when I looked at the time, you know, turned my phone back on, we were done. I was like, oh my God, that long?
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I'm so glad that the three of you really, really loved it. I mean, I enjoyed it. I definitely had sort of like quibbles and things like that, which I don't want to get into, but, you know, I don't want to turn this podcast into like a 2-hour podcast, and I've already sort of monopolized your time so much, but
sorry to interrupt. Can I just add two things real quick that I just really enjoyed that... Yeah. I really loved the idea of no man's land and her first woman. And as soon as they said no man's land, I actually kind of went, oh, because I knew it was going to happen next.
Yeah.
Right. I'm glad they avoided like the cliche. I love that moment in Lord of the Rings, but I'm glad they didn't like specify, well, I'm not a man. I can do that. Like it was just there to, and implied. It was
well,
nice.
Exactly. Yeah.
It was
and from-
implied, but I also really just from a story screenplay point of view, I loved when that she couldn't hear him when he's saying goodbye.
Yeah.
And we can't either at first, you know, so we find out later. So it's a great sort of build on that. But when he gives her the watch, I knew what he was going to do.
Yeah.
So that was a beautiful moment that it was through this gesture because they had established it that I knew it was going to happen next. And I started to get very emotional. And I just love that in storytelling where like you don't have to say it.
Yeah.
But that was a really beautiful moment that you wouldn't, I think, normally see in a soup. I'm using quotes, air quotes, superhero movie.
Yeah,
it's just like a good, you know, a good war film.
I'm so glad that you mentioned the no man's land moment because that for me, I called it on Facebook when I saw the movie and I was typing like what I thought. For me, was very much the Christopher Reeve catching the helicopter moment where I was like, oh my God, here we go. Like, I was just like, this is it. You know, like that's when I got excited. Like when she turns and she's like, you can, but I'm not gonna, you know? And for me, that was, you know, very much the moment where the movie just like, for me, just like turned, kicked into overdrive. And I'm like, here we go. Like Wonder Woman, I'm in, you know what I mean? Not that I didn't like anything preceding that, but I was that was the moment where I just like the heartstrings in my heart just like went like, you know, like I literally gasped and I'm like, I'm so ready for this. You know what I mean?
Well, and I don't know if you're aware, but Patty Jenkins has talked about that they really looked at the Richard Donner Superman as a great influence, you
Best
know?
Favorite movie ever. Anyway.
It's still just one of my absolute favorites. Yeah. And he's so Superman and charming. And, and you know, a review actually said it was that Gall was the best superhero, you know, debut since him. Uh-huh. But also, which was interesting, was the scene in the alleyway when she first, you know, stops the bullet. That was supposed to be, I saw this on an HBO First Look. Gal said that this was supposed to be a tribute or an homage to the scene in. And so I just love that they were thinking about that. And that's. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, she said that she, you know, she tried to get a mashup of Superman, of Indiana Jones, and Casablanca,
which
to me, like, she really like nailed, and you can see those fingerprints, those moments, like when they're dancing in that village, Casablanca. You're just like, oh, and then there's definitely kind of that humor slash kind of like hijinks of, you know, Indiana Jones sometimes, but also that kind of knowledge of that history and stuff that comes into play. It's just, I think she nailed it with those three kind of inspirations.
Well, that's really interesting. I mean, obviously, because I come from the Harrison Ford podcast, but I was trying to explain it to a college friend of mine who asked me if it was okay for her, I think like 7 and 10 year old maybe to see it. I forget the ages. And I was like, because I think it's a personal decision, you know, what you think your child can see.
Yeah.
And so I was explaining everything, and then I said, actually, it kind of gave me a Raiders of the Lost Ark feel.
Yeah.
If you can see Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it sort of came in the moment. I hadn't thought about it until I was explaining to her what might be appropriate for her kids, and that came out of my mouth.
Yeah.
So that's interesting that they were thinking that.
I have a 10-year-old daughter, and my Friday night screening was very much, is this appropriate for my child? And while there are things in there, you know, that I'm very much like, is sort of bordering. I think as a whole, for my 10-year-old, I'm like, yeah, I want her to see this because I want her to see the really strong female hero that doesn't, you know, need a man. And, you know, what I also am a little bit uncomfortable with, but am I think is necessary is the battle scenes in World War One. I feel like kids are definitely exposed to a lot of, like, you know, action violence that doesn't have repercussions. And, you know, every once in a while it's heard that, you know, like there's a war going on or terrorists did this and blah, blah, blah. And I don't feel like it sounds weird. It's not that I want to expose my daughter to that, but I think it's something that might open her eyes a little bit to, like, oh, this is, like, really bad. Like, hitting is bad. You know what I mean? It sounds kind of weird and complex. And, like, yes, I want to expose my daughter to awful things. But, no, that's not it. No. You know what I'm saying? I think it's an integral part of, you know, the story that a lot of other superhero movies avoid completely.
Yeah, the natural consequences of all these actions.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Exactly.
But on the other hand, I did sort of appreciate that there really is very little blood in the film, which I think is important. You know, I feel like when I was growing up, there weren't as much, you know, sort of graphic scenes in movies like this. And so that was really stood out. I mean, and I think the only blood that I can really remember is when they take the bandage off and she's surprised that, like, it's healed already, but the blood was really on the bandage. So I appreciate that. And I think that that connecting to, you know, being appropriate for kids is that all the moments that I was like, oh, well, there's this and this and there's, you know, implied, you know, sex stuff is that any of that stuff is going to go over kids' heads. They're all implied jokes that you never have gotten, as I have experienced going back to movies I watched as a kid and realizing there's a castration joke in Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
Which I did not get when I was a child.
Yeah. There's definitely stuff that will fly over the head, but there's also a point where, and I feel like this is, I feel like girls mature faster than boys, and I feel like there's definitely an age where things become more aware and you start to become, start to notice things, or awareness of things becomes more evident. And it's not that I can stop that. I'm not into that at all, but it's definitely a thing as, like, a parent where you're sort of like, just like, oh, wow. Like, you're starting to realize this stuff, and how do I explain this? And, like, what am I going to do? And, you know, I mean, I'm a dad and I don't know. Yes. You know, so it's just, it's very interesting, but I do feel like it's something that I very much want her to see. And we've kind of talked about it, and I've talked about the war stuff, and she's like, well, I'll just cover my eyes. And I was like, okay, that's great. You know, if things get too scary, but you know, from my point of view, I think this was a really great movie. I really did enjoy it. I did have issues with it, which I won't go into, mostly from filmmaking and cinematography and stuff, viewpoints. But I feel like as a whole, like, I really enjoyed it. I really can't wait to show my daughter. I'm so glad that it's getting the attention that it's getting. And most of all, I'm just really glad that all three of you came onto my podcast to discuss it, because I really just feel like this has been, like, a really great chat, and just getting your viewpoint is like really fantastic. And thank you so much for coming on to Part-Time Fanboy, or we'll call this week Part-Time Fangirl or Woman, whatever's less offensive. I always feel like men are putting our foot in our mouth, you know, but thank you so much. And please just remind everyone, you know, where you guys are from, what you guys are doing, URLs, all that stuff. Let's start with Lauren this time, since she went last.
Okay. You can find me. My website is laurenmilberger.com. My Twitter handle is Lauren Milberger, and that's MilbergerLauren. So many people spell it wrong. I also co-host the Harrison Ford podcast, known as The Fordcast. You can find us at thefordcastpodcast.com and on all social media as thefordcastpodcast.com, except on Twitter, where we are The Fordcast PC. Nice. And then I'm currently freelance with my essay and article work, so you can find that on my social media or my website when I post stuff.
Awesome. Rena, how about you?
Hey, again. So quick thanks for having me and everybody else on here. This was a great listening. Mostly, I know it wasn't that as active, but you all are like a boatload of information, so I appreciate that. But on Instagram, I'm ChainsawQueen13, and I also host an open mic night at Cal State Long Beach twice a year, and that's you can find that on Facebook. It's the F Word Open Mic Night, and yeah, that's me.
Awesome. And last but not least, Kimmy.
Oh, thank you again so much for having me here. It was a fabulous discussion. I never get enough of talking about my favorite superhero. I am Golden Lasso Girl on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, all those things. I do a bunch of cosplay on my on my blog, goldenlasso.net. I talk about cosplay, comics, TV and film, also tabletop gaming, which is another big hobby of mine. You can also find me on the Happy Jacks RPG podcast. So it's happyjacks.org, where we basically drink beer and talk about tabletop gaming like D&D, which is super nerdy and not comic book related, but also super cool. Yeah. And yeah, so lots of crazy stuff. Golden Lasso Girl, and you'll pretty much find me anywhere.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, and my name is Christian Horn, and this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast, where we have discussed Wonder Woman. I thank all three of you deeply from the bottom of my heart for coming onto the podcast. And definitely go out and see Wonder Woman. And you can find Part-Time Fanboy on parttimefanboy.com. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook, yada, yada. And thank you for listening. And we will be back. We will be back soon with our 200th episode. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
Part-time fanboy.com.